Tripping Over You by Fantulf. The Salvadorians are... Malfoy started, with that condescending tone that seemed to constantly color his words. Both he and Harry were completely helpless, because they relied too much on translation spells, as opposed to Luna and Ginny, who were smart enough to study a bit of Portuguese before coming on this trip, something the girls would never let them forget. There was no reason for the arrogance, because of course the spells weren't working anymore. "I don't even understand how you secured that aura job when you can't even perform the simplest spells, Potter." Harry abstained from pointing out that Malfoy couldn't either. Instead, he interrupted, raising an eyebrow. "What the fuck is that?" Malfoy's mask of arrogance faded a bit, his lower lip trembling in the way it always did when he felt either guilty or was about to cry. And Harry hated he could tell which one it was this time. "I don't know. People from Salvador?" Harry gaped at him for a second, blinked, and then contained a chuckle. He wouldn't hear the end of it if he laughed at Draco Malfoy. "You mean Soteropolitanos," Harry politely corrected, wincing at his own thick accent. Malfoy spluttered, a hand on his chest and brows knitted closely. "Don't be patronizing, Potter. It's not as if you know a lot more than I do." "At least I know what to call them," Harry thought to himself, but refused to fuel Malfoy's tirade against each and every mistake Harry made. But that was not when Harry knew this trip would be a complete disaster. It had been way before. Not when Luna simply decided she'd befriend an ex-Death Eater and said that infamous phrase Harry couldn't forget to this day.
"I think you two could get along well. He's your type."
Harry almost retched. He didn't have a type. And if he had, it was surely not Malfoy. Harry didn't even have that much time to date, let alone be picky about it. He ended up agreeing to whatever Luna wanted, just so she could stop listing Malfoy's attributes. His skin is so smooth, and his hair feels like silk. Only later that day finding out that he had agreed to bring Malfoy on their holiday, when it should have been only Harry, Ginny, and Luna. Wasn't it enough that Malfoy seemed to be everywhere they were nowadays? The ministry during Harry's work hours, lunches at Luna's, the pub nights, rarer each day, and now his trip across Latin America. And, okay, maybe across was a strong word because, as Harry came to realize, Latin America, Brazil more specifically, is huge, and they were only visiting two states of a total of 26, Potter, you uncultured oaf, Malfoy had said during their first meeting to decide their schedule. Not that they'd need another one, since fucking Malfoy had shown up with a schedule for every single second of their trip set in stone and would accept no changes or even suggestions. "Why the hell would I know how many states Brazil has?" Harry had retorted, like it was an obvious, simple thing, though Harry silently decided to learn a tad more about the country, just so he could rile Malfoy up. And, as he later realized, nothing was simple with Malfoy. From the places they were going to have breakfast. "This restaurant has 5 stars on all the guides I read. It's not just food. I don't care we're on a budget, Potter. We're going to eat there or we're not eating at all." To the amount of luggage they'd take. "We have to be conscious about our choices of clothing to take, or we won't have space to bring back souvenirs. There's just so much an extension charm that's resistant to continental port keys can do, and I won't spare any space in my suitcases because you didn't think about it hard enough, Potter." Harry had tuned out half of what Malfoy said, once he realized that Malfoy's jabs were always directed at him. He was never one to follow rules, and he wasn't about to start now when the one dictating them was Draco fucking Malfoy. And regardless, Harry was sure Malfoy would complain about him whether or not he followed his schedule and orders. The whole idea for the trip had come from Ginny. She had been in an international Quidditch game hosted in Brazil, and since then, couldn't stop pestering Harry and Luna about how much they'd absolutely love it there. And if she had the intention of getting Luna in a bathing suit, she didn't point it out. Adventurous as he was, Harry naturally, and rather eagerly, said yes to the idea of a reprieve from the British winter. It would be nice, he thought, to get away from London and the press, and the hope in everyone's eyes, and the bloody grief that still hovered over him like his private nimbus cloud. So he, Luna, and Ginny started organizing everything for their frolics. until Malfoy came along with his Wixen Extraordinaire Tourism and Recreation International Program Network talk. The acronym for that sounded like something else entirely. Harry snickered internally at the idea of posh Malfoy saying a plebeian phrase like, "we tripping," and unfortunately made the mistake of questioning him about it, to which he got a long essay about how "We Trippin' is a prestigious, high-principled organization, ensuring that Wixen's trips throughout the world are easier and safer. They are equipped with a vast network of hostels, an extraordinary staff, and guides for local cuisine and important tourist attractions." After this, Harry was forced to read about 30 pages of tourism pamphlets before Malfoy would shut up. He was this close to asking Malfoy if he was shagging any of those extraordinary staff members he seemed to know so well. Rio de Janeiro, 12 February to 16 February, 2003. But truly, it wasn't even then that he knew this whole thing would end in catastrophe. It really started on the first day of the trip, when Harry realized that Malfoy had booked only one room for him and Harry to share in all of their destinations. Harry wouldn't mind it that much, not that he was happy with it, but having only one bed to share was the last straw. He couldn't see the reason behind having them spend fortunes on food, and he and Malfoy have to share a room just because, "didn't you want a cheap trip, Potter? That's your chance," according to Malfoy. "This is a magical inn. I'm sure you can fix this and get me another fucking bed, Malfoy." Malfoy fixed nothing. And since everything was overly complicated with him, and Harry was not in the mood to listen to his lessons about overworked hostel employees, etc., he just went with it. It couldn't hurt. It'd be just this hotel. This one mishap. He was sure of it. It wasn't. But that was for future Harry to worry about. In Rio, Harry did all he could to completely ignore Malfoy's presence. After their first outside exploration, he could swear this was an even harder task than defeating Voldemort, as Malfoy kept nagging Harry about everything he did or didn't do. Or, "What do you think of this hat, Potter?" To which he replied, "I don't fucking care if you carry a watermelon on your head, Malfoy." That left Malfoy pouting for the rest of the day, but did not keep him from bothering the hell out of Harry. He only partially shut up when they reached the statue of Christ the Redeemer, and Luna took the longest time to take a picture of them both together. Harry couldn't figure out why he would want a photo with Malfoy, but assumed it couldn't hurt when they both had to stay silent and smile. From Luna's indulgent grin, Harry was sure the delay was on purpose. From there, Malfoy started exchanging photography tips with her, and finally left Harry to his own devices, or to be pestered now by Ginny. In the end, this first destination passed in a blur of, "You can't even take a fucking picture, Potter," and, "Stay on your side of the bed, Malfoy." Arraial do Cabo, Rio de Janeiro, 17 February to 23 February 2003. The drive to their second city was hell. Harry was the designated driver, taking them all the way from Rio de Janeiro to Arraial do Cabo, because the town was so small it didn't have a portkey station or apparition points, and Harry was the only one who bothered getting a driver's license. But of course, when he and Malfoy couldn't stop arguing about Harry's driving skills, "I'm a great driver, excuse me," he had said, and Malfoy retorted, "Keep lying to yourself, Potter." Ginny made him pull over and traded her seat in the back of the car with Malfoy, sitting beside Harry instead, with threats of, "If any of you say another word, so help me Merlin, but I'll happily go to prison for murder." The fighting had stopped after that, and Harry had to concede that all the hassle was worth it when they saw the first view of the crystal-clear water of the white sand beach. By the time they got to their inn in Arraial do Cabo, and he saw that there was only one bed again, Harry was pretty sure the whole setup was on purpose. He just couldn't figure out why. So, their first night in the Posada da Prainha, or PP Inn, like Malfoy liked to call it, to Harry's dismay, because he couldn't very much make a joke about it if he wanted peace, Harry sprawled over the bed, leaving only a bit of space for Malfoy in the corner, their legs and arms touching. Even though the bed was comfortable, and there was a cool breeze making its way into their room, Malfoy was so stiff during the night, Harry was sure he had accomplished his goal of narking him. The following night, Malfoy slept in the chair beside their bed. Their stay in Arrayal do Cabo was uneventful enough that Harry relaxed and enjoyed the sea, the sun, and the bittersweet burn on his skin after he forgot to renew his sun protection spells on the first visit to the beach, even when he had to sport two handprints Ginny had left on his back as a practical joke. Malfoy became subdued after Harry took over their bed on the first day. He'd have done that sooner if he knew that this was the solution for the man's inability to stay silent. Whenever Harry talked to him, and he didn't do that often, Malfoy would go all flushed and pretend he wanted to go for a swim instead of replying to whatever banter Harry had directed at his pout. There was a single moment where he wasn't able to run away, when Harry reluctantly agreed the restaurants Malfoy had picked were not bad. The flushed and pleased look Malfoy gifted him with was enough to make Harry almost lose his grounding. Of course Harry fucking loved the damn restaurants. They were all perfect. And if he was being honest, so were the inns, despite the bed issue. But he wouldn't admit as much. Malfoy was silent even during their hike to the Kabukla viewpoint. Each new name the translation spells gave them brought a new wave of incessant laughter from Ginny. And between, "Do you think you'll find a good match at Stove Beach, Harry? Maybe things will heat up." And, "You'll get to show off your heavenly savior body at Angel Beach." Harry was not a fucking heavenly savior. He glared at Malfoy, sure he would have a piece of his mind to share. Malfoy didn't, though his cheeks got redder at each of Ginny's jokes. When they finally got back to their inn to rest in the pool for the rest of the day, Harry was waiting for the moment Malfoy would explode. He ended up foregoing sleeping on the bed that night, attempting not to poke the snake even further. Malfoy didn't thank him, but he looked calmer in the morning. After this, they seemed to reach a sort of silent agreement. They'd alternate who would sleep on the bed each day. Their banter wasn't so hurtful anymore, and even if Malfoy's quietness didn't last any longer, it also didn't bother Harry as much. At one point, Malfoy started using his own sun protection spells on Harry, because he seemed to forget them too often, and Malfoy couldn't hear complaints about burning skin one more second. Harry couldn't argue with him, especially because Malfoy's magic brushing his skin was soft and cool. He thought the number of spells Malfoy used would be uncomfortable, but it felt like wearing an invisible, silky skin. He thanked Malfoy, but didn't really confess how much he loved those spells, nor ask how to cast them. Their truce lasted until one of the last restaurants on Malfoy's list. For some reason, their server seemed extremely fond of gifting Malfoy with bright smiles, and Harry with none. It wasn't about Malfoy salaciously winking at the man, but the way the server treated Harry. He was paying for the service and wanted to be treated well. Harry was within his rights to be mad, and his sour mood lasted until Malfoy agreed to try a different restaurant the following day. It wasn't as good, but there was no muscled, tanned, and very tall server hitting on Malfoy. No, more importantly, ignoring Harry, either. Salvador, Bahia. 24 February to 6 March, 2003. Salvador brought a weird mood to their little group. They were most excited to get there because of Carnival, having heard a great deal about the 6 days of parties, and Malfoy wouldn't shut up about how Salvador holds the largest street parties in the world, did you know? They were still 3 days away from the beginning of the festivities, but the hype and energy were palpable in the air. Harry found he could not stay still, his fidgeting taking on another level on the days prior to the 27th. On the second day, Harry couldn't stop moving long enough to be sat in their chairs on the beach of Puerto de Barra, nor could he concentrate enough to keep himself from drowning in the sea, the wonderful perks of learning how to swim too late in life, after years of being denied anything that wasn't strictly what the government deemed essential for raising a kid. Malfoy tied him to the sun lounger with a spell, and Harry would have arrested him for it if everyone on the beach wasn't too preoccupied with their own tans. By then, they had accepted that their translation spells would not work. Thankfully, though, not only did Ginny and Luna know enough Portuguese to get them by, or at least to get them some food, but the city was so packed with tourists, they didn't have that much trouble finding friendly English speakers to interact with. Even the servers tested their luck with the language, occasionally drawing laughter from the group, but ultimately getting their point across. Salvador was chaotic, but in a good way. There was music and parties and people screaming everywhere they went, and the whole seafront was all but ready to host the famous carnival with its giant structures, which he learned were camarotes, something like an exclusive box to watch the shows, and colorfully adorned streets. Harry had to concede, to himself since he'd never admitted out loud, that Malfoy had done a great job organizing the trip. Their small inn in Salvador was in front of a beach in Ondina, a neighborhood right at the end of the carnival circuit. The best part about this, which Harry would find out 2 days later, was that they wouldn't have to walk back much in their exhausted states. Apparating was out of the question since the city got millions of visitors during Carnival, and there wasn't a single empty spot for them to use safely. "I'm not you, Potter. I think about everything," Malfoy said as they got ready for their first night out. The bloco, which Malfoy had vaguely explained to be the agglomeration of people following giant cars, but Harry had paid little attention and refused to ask again, they chose, or rather Malfoy chose, Os Moscarados, or the Masked Ones, was scheduled to leave the starting point of the Dodo circuit at around 1 a.m. However, the sun had not set long ago, and the weather was so nice they were willing to go out and watch the other blocos before theirs. Harry was tempted to release the rebuttal on the tip of his tongue, but it'd be a lie. He didn't really think of everything. And alas, he couldn't find his words even if he wanted, as he stared at Malfoy. Apparently, Os Mascarados was a bloco where people went wearing the craziest costumes. Malfoy, thinking it would be fun, decided they'd start with that on the first day. Harry didn't have it in him at the time to refuse, because it did sound like fun, and he was glad now he didn't, as he appraised Malfoy from head to toe. He was displaying lips redder than what should be naturally possible, white bunny ears, an equally colorless corset that showed more of his body than it hid, a tiny skirt, white boots, and, not that Harry was actively looking for it, a small, fluffy bunny tail. "Won't that fall off?" he asked, lacking anything better to say and needing something to justify his gaping. Malfoy raised an eyebrow at him, and the amused twitch on the corner of his lips told Harry he had failed to mask his embarrassing gawking.
"Spellotape, aren't you going to get ready? I don't want to be late because of you, Potter. Again."
They were only late because of Harry once, when he had trouble waking up after the first night on the chair of their shared room in Arreal do Cabo, and it was entirely Malfoy's fault. Luckily, they had agreed to go back to sharing the bed in Salvador, since it didn't seem likely they'd get another bed if it was up to Malfoy, and Harry was too tired and needed to rest. Harry turned back to the mirror he had been staring at before, fingers loosely holding a brush smeared with golden paint. He was almost done with the face paint, and his costume was easy enough that he only needed a minute to put it on. But arguing was getting tiring, so Harry just hurried with his makeup, took off his shirt, ignoring Malfoy's gasp behind him, and shoved the Egyptian headdress over his hair. He grinned at his reflection.
"Are you going out like that?"
Malfoy asked, pointing at the entirety of Harry, though his eyes were locked on his bare chest. Harry turned to him, noting the deep flush on Malfoy's cheeks and the way he avoided his eyes.
"Yeah. Problem?"
Malfoy stayed silent until Ginny and Luna barged into their room shortly after, carrying an inordinate amount of body glitter to spread all over them. Ginny was dressed in a simple Roman dress, with a crown that wasn't historically accurate. But she was a lot like Harry, and they didn't think too much about their outfits, favoring comfort instead. Luna? Well, she had certainly left no stone unturned when coming up with whatever she was wearing. A huge feathered headdress on her head, a mask, several bead necklaces and bracelets, and a corset with two cones on top of her breasts. It was Ginny's glare alone that quieted whatever comments Harry and Draco had about the bright green and red outfit, though they shot a smirk at each other before they left. Harry only had a vague idea of what the blocos were after Draco's description, but he was not prepared for the mass of millions of people walking down the street, which was transformed into a circuit, to the rhythm of the same song. A giant sound truck, which the Soteropolitanos called Trio Eléctricos, led each bloco with one singer or band, and they were separated by people holding thick ropes. Each bloco had its own outfits, or, in their case, themes.
The one blocco going through the street as they fought the mass of the people was called Cerveja y Silla, or something like Beer and Company. It was led by Yvette Sangalo, and everyone but them seemed to know her, so Harry assumed she was a big figure in Brazil. Her music was electric, and even though Draco admonished him for how long they'd take to cross the entire circuit to reach their blocco if they didn't hurry, even though they had hours, Harry couldn't stop jumping and dancing to the sound of axé, a music genre very popular during the Bahian Carnival that was the best, most magical thing Harry had ever heard. When he had read about Salvador's magical atmosphere during Carnival, in a testimonial on one of Draco's many Wee Trippin' brochures, Harry wasn't sure what it meant. He wasn't sure he believed it. Harry knew magic. He used it every day. At home, at his job. How could music, people, and heat simply create magic? He hadn't had the answer for that. But it did. The energy pulsing through him at each beat of the music, at each of his jumps, or when his body brushed against another body filled with the same sweat and the same spark was alive. It was truly magic. Harry felt like he could burst or conjure the most complex of spells wandlessly, thoughtlessly, on instinct. Draco, though, didn't seem to be enjoying the crowd, sweat, and loud music as much. His face was creased in a grimace from the moment they left their inn to when they finally reached their blocco hours later. Harry watched in amusement as Ginny shoved drink after drink in Draco's hand, his scowl slowly smoothed out by the alcohol and a soft flush tinting his cheeks. Harry himself wasn't very much behind, feeling pleasantly drunk, tripping over his own feet, and being held by the nameless crowd that didn't stop walking and dancing and jumping for a second. He noticed, distantly, the ache in his feet and in his back, and that he had drunk too much already, but none of that diminished the joyfulness bubbling inside of him. None of it mattered. It was during one of those slips that Harry landed in the arms of a man wearing only a bow tie and trunks, on whose foot he had tripped. The man directed him such a blatantly sultry grin, there was no doubt about what he wanted. And one glance around proved Harry wouldn't be the only one lost in the mouth of handsome strangers with beefy arms. He lost the entirety of the next two songs Margaret Menezes, the singer leading their blocco, sang, in a fumble of hot limbs and exploring lips. Harry had to be coaxed into walking once their trio eléctrico moved again. Only then did he disentangle himself from the hot man who had his tongue shoved down his throat. Stumbling down the path again, he first noticed the pale hand on his forearm, then the scowl making an appearance back on Draco's face. Raising his gaze, though, all Harry saw in those gray eyes was hunger. Hunger, arousal, and challenge. His kissing mate realized what Draco wanted way before Harry, and dived into him with the same craving he had poured into Harry's mouth before. He watched as the stranger caught Draco's lower lip between his teeth before his eyes turned to Harry, inviting. And he joined them, because he was too drunk to be possessive and to pretend he didn't feel jealous about Draco. And because, if he admitted to himself, Draco's red lips had called out to him from the moment Harry had seen his flushed self inside all that white costume. Their triple kiss was hot. But it didn't last long. Somehow Harry got trapped between alabaster arms and didn't even notice when the bowtie guy left them alone, and his attention was entirely on Draco's. He lost himself in moony eyes and softer lips than he expected. Harry didn't mind Draco's monopoly. He wouldn't be able to deny the shivers Draco's kisses sent down his spine, and pretended he was too wasted to notice the glare Draco sent to whomever tried to approach them. Harry wasn't paying enough attention to their path to realize they were getting to the end of the circuit. It probably meant they'd have to stop kissing in order to get back to their inn, and he wasn't much interested in that. They didn't stop, lingering around the beach, Harry's hands grabbing pale hair as the moonlight bathed their damp skin. It took a lot of work from Ginny to pry them apart, only for them to launch at each other on the stairs to their room's floor. Harry heard Luna's soft laugh in the background. But his mind was otherwise focused on much more interesting tasks, not tripping over himself and, of course, kissing Draco senseless. They fell on the bed in a mass of limbs and warm skin, but before Harry's sloppy lips had even reached Draco's collarbone, he was intent on tasting all of him, even if it led to some glitter eating.
Draco's breathing had almost evened out. Harry settled by his side and only managed to rip Draco's bloody skirt before exhaustion claimed him. The intense banging on the door ripped Harry out of his slumber with a start, and for a second he could swear it might actually break his skull. Groaning, he dragged himself from under Draco's body, where Draco had settled in the middle of the night, or morning, considering they had got back when the sun had nearly dawned, and still rested, completely motionless. Harry crawled to the door. It took a moment for his eyes to get marginally used to the light filtering from the blinds they'd forgot to close, and then the corridor's lamps, before he glanced at Ginny's sly grin. Suddenly sure that all the noise had been on purpose, he groaned even louder, and regretted it almost immediately when the sound of his own voice painfully reminded him of the amount of alcohol he drank not too many hours before, from the looks of it. He should not have drunk so much.
"Good afternoon," Ginny said,
and though her voice was at her normal volume, it reverberated inside Harry's head, much like a loose ping-pong ball bouncing wildly inside him. Luna, bless her, seemed to take pity on him and just smiled at Harry from her place behind Ginny. There wasn't a single sign of exhaustion on her face, as opposed to the dark bags under Gin's eyes, and, Harry was sure, his own, and he was tempted to ask what her secret was.
"What do you want?"
Harry grumbled, with a half-arsed grimace that got lost in a greater effort to protect his pupils from the light. It was certainly too early for them to be out of bed after drinking an amount no human should, walking lengths his feet would never forgive them for, and jumping non-stop for about 10 hours straight.
"We have bad news for you, lover boys. Luna and I are going back to England early."
The absolute somber tone of her words was what made Harry miss the lover boys almost entirely, and focus instead on what she was really saying. And at that, he sobered instantly, horror instincts taking over his knackered body.
"What the fuck? What happened? Are Ron and Hermione okay?"
Ginny leaned her body against the doorframe, snorting inelegantly.
"Your concern about my well-being is touching. Don't panic, Harry, it's just Fleur. Well, actually, it's Mum, Dad, Ron, George, and Bill."
With a roll of her eyes, she continued, gesturing tiredly.
"Fleur went into labor this morning, and apparently Velas release a lot of allure when giving birth. Enough that they're freaking out, and she's panicking and refusing to go to St. Mungo's, and apparently I am to go to the rescue."
Stunned into a permanent state of frozen shock, Harry just blinked at Ginny a few times before she gave up on him with another aggressive roll of her eyes. When asked if they'd be all right on their own, he watched Draco let out an unintelligible grunt that Harry assumed was an affirmation, before Ginny left with a wink, only then thinking of asking, why the fuck did Luna have to go back with her? The thought didn't linger. The tipsiness returned once he wasn't faced with the possibility of a life-or-death situation anymore. Draco and Harry couldn't get past the hangover enough during the rest of the day to get out of bed. They ended up silently agreeing to stay in, tucked inside the blankets and enveloped by 1,000 or more cooling charms. After the girls went back to England and they were left to their own devices, Harry met a side of Draco he had never seen, not even during those long hours in sixth year he spent watching him from the shadowed corners. Not once during that trip. Not that he had noticed, at least. Draco was still a git most of the time, stubborn as fuck and always wanting everything his way. But there was a softness to his pointy features as he stared at Harry, now that there wasn't anyone left to witness his fond grins, or the way his hand made its way to Harry's nape as if he didn't even notice the movement, that made Harry wonder, had he not noticed before, or was this all new? All in all, Harry found he didn't mind Draco's opinionated personality that much. Most of Draco's recalcitrance was usually focused on making things better for them. For Harry. Draco paid attention to Harry, to what he wanted, to what he needed. He offered to trade Harry's lettuce, whenever it appeared on his plate, for fries or whatever he had, before Harry had even had the chance to ask. Draco seemed to know what things would make him smile, what he'd like to eat, and Harry wondered what else Draco knew about him, and for how long. He started paying attention, too. Despite how Draco always wore his sun protection spells, and never once neglected to give Harry the same treatment, his skin was always red on the shoulders and nose when they went back to the inn. Draco was careful whom he showed his caring side to. He hid behind snarky comments and aggressiveness whenever he faced something new or potentially embarrassing. He got extremely anxious when Harry tried to get him to try things outside his schedule, and Harry could understand the need for control, but he would also love to see Draco letting go every once in a while. It was in one of those moments that he convinced Draco to ditch their fourth day of partying. Honestly, Harry had never, ever had so much fun like in Salvador's carnival, but despite his aura build and the numerous foot massages that Draco gave him, he wasn't really made for that amount of exercise. In lieu of an adventure. They rented a small boat that Draco couldn't stop complaining about falling to pieces and leaving them in the middle of the ocean to drown, and set sail for the most beautiful and hidden beach the captain knew. Or at least, Harry hoped it'd be a nice beach, considering their challenges in communicating with almost no knowledge of Portuguese and only a small dictionary to help. Their translation spells were still not working, but Harry didn't try again, because he found he enjoyed watching Draco's flustered frown as he tried his luck speaking Portuguese with their guide. He hadn't been sure if the boat owner had understood them, but the beach he took them to after an hour's trip was perfect. There were a few other boats scattered around the sea, some docked to a small rickety-looking pier. According to the guide, and Draco's hopefully not so way-off translation, that beach was a hidden spot on Friar's Island, or Ilha dos Frades, very close to Salvador, but still far enough that few people went there. They had the entire day to relax under the sun, which had changed from blinding and scalding into something so comfortable Harry napped for a few good hours on the extremely white sand before Draco dragged him to the sea. The pellucid water was so warm and cozy when they made their way in that Harry could easily picture himself spending the rest of his life in a place like that. When it was time to go, Draco pouted. He didn't admit Harry had been right and that they had, indeed, had a wonderful day outside the schedule, but Harry could see it in his eyes and the sated curl of his lips. They didn't attempt partying at Carnival again when they were back in Salvador, exhaustion still seeping from the cracks in their resting time. The last days of their stay in the city went by in a blur. Nothing beat the feeling of tasting Draco's mouth and his body, and if Harry was being totally honest, staying tucked in with Draco in bed was more appealing than going out most of the time. But apparently, keeping the schedule was still important, and Draco hadn't port-keyed to the other side of the Atlantic just to stay inside a hotel room. He didn't say it, but Harry hoped they could keep doing this back in London. However, Harry was prepared for a rejection and was going to enjoy every moment they had together, because surprisingly, being the center of Draco Malfoy's attention was something brilliant. On their last day in Salvador, Draco dragged him to all the amazing places he had read about, making him taste everything the city's unique cuisine could offer. Acarajé with shrimp, a dish made of fish and other seafood called moqueca, and grilled rennet cheese on a stick with sugarcane molasses. Harry loved each one of them. Ilhéus, Bahia. 7 March to 13 March, 2003. The trip to their last destination wasn't what one would call pleasant, with the riotous waves making the ferry boat bounce so hard, Harry felt himself jumping on his seat more than once. It had been Draco's insistence that they have the authentic experience of traveling to Ilhéus, a city on the southern coast of Bahia. Harry only abstained from calling Draco out on it because of the green hue his pale face had gained since they had set sail. But he did shoot him a knowing grin once Draco all but ran from their boat when they finally docked on Itaparica Island, from which they'd get a bus to Ilhéus, and almost kissed the floor at his feet.
"Don't say a thing," Draco admonished, as he dragged Harry to wherever he had booked the bus to take them to the Cana Brava Resort.
Surprisingly, this resort had been the only concession Draco had made in their arrangements for the trip. It was a Muggle hotel, but only because it was all-inclusive and we want to experience everything that this place has to offer. Draco didn't really have to sell them on the idea, despite the exorbitant fees. They had all agreed when they heard the resort included pools, beaches, game rooms, food and drinks at will, spas, parties, and plenty of other activities in and outside the complex. Harry was particularly interested in spending their first day in the hot tub he was sure Draco would have got for them. He just wasn't expecting it all to go south in their first few minutes in the place. Harry had let Draco handle their booking in the reception for the most part, while he busied himself in admiring the rustic aspect of the wooden furniture adorning the lobby. When he felt Draco's fingers slipping through his, Harry smiled to himself, letting Draco drag them to where their porter was guiding their luggage. The porter didn't look older than Harry himself. Thankfully, he spoke English well enough that they could communicate, despite the thick and dragged accent. Harry listened with amusement as Draco and the boy got into a heated conversation about Carnival and what were the best parties inside the resort. Though if Harry was being honest, he wasn't all that eager to go to any more shindigs, even less so now that they had left Salvador and its ebullient festivities behind. "What would you recommend if we just want to chill?" Harry asked, seizing a break in the conversation. The boy grinned broadly at him, loading their luggage into an elevator. Harry had to tug Draco's hand and return his distrustful glare with a reassuring nod before he went inside. The porter didn't seem to notice the brief exchange, as he went on about something called Ayurveda, whatever that was, before peering at their intertwined fingers.
"You guys are a couple, right?"
he asked cheerily. It's not that Harry hadn't thought about it. Not actively, at least. Whatever he and Draco were brewing in that trip certainly seemed a lot like a relationship. He liked Draco. Maybe he'd liked Draco for far longer than he'd admit, and enjoyed being with him. But Harry also didn't want to assume anything, or worse, hope, and then get the wrong end of the stick when they got back to London. So when he laughed dismissively, replying with a rushed, "No," at the same time as Draco said, "Yes," Harry was genuinely and innocently confused, and more than a little hopeful.
"Wait, what?"
Both turned to each other at the same time, Draco's eyebrows making a slow descent on his face, and Harry's, well, he wasn't sure how to react, and opted to give the confused porter a wan smile instead of watching Draco's face crease in a fury he honestly didn't know the origin of. However, when the doors to the elevator opened, and Harry got a glimpse of Draco's deep scowl, he knew instantly that he had given the absolute worst answer possible. Draco dropped his hand violently, as if it was on fire, and stomped to their room. Harry would love to say he fixed the situation fast enough that they could enjoy their stay in that wonderful place and pretend the entire ordeal hadn't happened. It would be a lie. Not only did Draco manage to give Harry the silent treatment for the whole 42 minutes Harry tried apologizing before Draco slammed the door in his face, but he also got back the room he had booked for Ginny and Luna and holed himself up in there for the days to come. And Harry missed him. He missed the surprising warmth of Draco's body and his care towards Harry. He missed Draco's kisses and intense gaze that seemed to always be searching for something in Harry's. Harry even missed the snarky remarks and his sometimes maddening temperament that was enough to tax the patience of a saint. Harry was beginning to find it charming, and this realization didn't even bother him as much as he thought it should. He tried tracking Draco out in the resort for 5 days, but Draco locked himself in whatever activity he deemed would serve the purpose of avoiding Harry. Whenever he got a glimpse of platinum blonde hair and stormy gray eyes, they'd vanish from his sight almost instantly. Once, Harry had stayed behind while watching Draco's unnaturally leisured stance on a yacht on his way to another beach, and had no way of catching up to him. Then, he almost caught Draco on his way to a stand-up paddling session, but before he could talk to him, Draco had disappeared, and the beach server vehemently refused to let Harry get in the water, claiming there weren't any paddleboards left, even though Harry could count at least half a dozen in a tent close by. Harry was sure Draco had a hand in his refusal. By the 5th day, Harry got such a pitiful look from the porter, who had got him in that mess, when he was caught coming from yet another failed attempt at talking to Draco, that he decided enough was enough. Harry had given Draco enough time to brood, and it was becoming ridiculous. That day, Harry did something he thought he wouldn't have to do once during the trip, not only because, well, he had Draco, but also because he was truly a rebel in his heart and took it as a personal way of life to ignore most rules he ever encountered. Not that he'd say that out loud, especially not near Hermione. He studied Draco's rigid schedule. Harry was always a step behind Draco, and he was positive Draco would be following his bloody program to the bone. And the next activity he discovered Draco would be doing for the next hour brought a hopeful, yet bold, grin to his face. Draco, who was predictably always early, was the first one to go into the sauna. Harry was on his trail. He cast a bunch of notice-me-nots and privacy spells that would prevent the muggles from even thinking of using the amenity, and give him enough time to at least try to get Draco to talk to him. Harry forced his thoughts away from how much trouble he'd be in if Hedora Robards ever found out what he was doing, went in, and spelled the door closed behind him just to be sure. Draco turned to him, probably sensing the surge of magic in the confined space. However, whatever words he had on the tip of his tongue were lost in a flushed stutter when his eyes traveled from Harry's face to his bare torso to his crotch, covered only by a short white towel, much like himself. Harry toned down the smugness in his grin. It wouldn't bode well for him if Draco didn't really believe he was being genuine there, despite the slightly trapping manner in which Harry had got them to talk. "Draco," Harry called, and watched with satisfaction as Draco's eyes finally darted up to his face. Draco scowled, but Harry pushed on, with the most pacifying tone he could. "Draco, can you stop avoiding me for a second? We need to talk. Please." Draco didn't try the door. He didn't even move to leave, when he crossed his arms with an affected roll of his eyes. He simply sat on one of the wooden benches, his collarbones and chest becoming progressively redder with the heat in the room. He raised an eyebrow and said, "My Potter, what would we have to talk about? I wouldn't want to impose my presence on the great Savior when he isn't in the mood for someone as clingy as myself." "For God's sake, Draco," Harry blurted, arms lifting up. "Where the fuck did you get that from? How can you assume I wouldn't want to spend time with you after the last few weeks?" Draco blinked, unimpressed. "You made your feelings very clear, Potter. We are not in a relationship. I was just making things easier for you. I'm sure this forced proximity was extremely inconvenient, and now you don't have to worry about it anymore." "I'm sorry, okay? I wasn't—" Harry started again, helplessly. "We never discussed any of this. How would I know that was what you wanted?" Draco snorted, unamused, casting his gaze that had, until that moment, clearly had trouble not staring directly at Harry's abs, on the closest wall. "I don't know, Potter. Maybe after sharing a bed for so long, or when we walked hand in hand, or—" Harry huffed, pulling at his hair. He couldn't really believe he was hearing this. Somehow, he'd always known Draco was the most dramatic person he'd ever met, but he didn't really expect that all that drama would be directed at him. Not like this, at least. Not without foundation, or reason, or any sense. The worst part of it was that Harry wanted to fix it, almost with the same intensity as he wanted to laugh. He had hurt Draco, he knew that. But how could he take him seriously when Draco went out of his way to exaggerate a point about how Harry had hurt him? That behavior was so Draco. Harry wasn't sure he'd like it any other way. He sighed, but there was a fond grin on his lips. "Draco, were you trying to trap me into becoming your boyfriend without me noticing?" Harry didn't know how it was possible that Draco's cheeks could flush even deeper, but they did. Draco worked his jaw before facing Harry again. His lips creased in a pout, his gaze fighting between Harry's groin and his eyes.
"It might have been part of the plan. I knew you were oblivious, Potter, but I wasn't aware it was this much."
Harry laughed, and he felt like he could cry or his chest could burst. He approached Draco with slow steps, and when Draco didn't back down, Harry slotted himself between sweaty legs.
"Yeah, I am." "Considering your aura background, I assumed you'd have figured that out sooner. What a lousy detective you are, Aura Potter," Draco smirked, hands falling on Harry's hips. "I should just quit."
Harry's hand cupped Draco's face.
"Can we enjoy the rest of the trip together now, please?"
Draco's eyebrows shot up, but his sweet smile softened his expression. Harry knew that he'd always be the only one to see such a look on Draco. Draco, who was always taking care of him in secret, who was always looking, and who was always hoping. Harry found he was hoping, too.
"You didn't really answer the greatest question of all, Potter," Draco whispered.
"Which is?"
"Are you my boyfriend?"
Draco's expression was defiant, his lips firmly pursed, his eyes glinting dangerously. But there was a tension in his shoulders, doubt in his arched eyebrows. Harry grinned, tipping Draco's head upwards so their lips would be brushing again. When he whispered, his words fell on rosy lips, and Draco swallowed them with a hunger Harry should have noticed before.
"Don't you already know?"
Ilios, Bahia, 16th February, 2008.
"Draco," Harry started, sounding like a warning but also a bit like hope. "What the fuck are you plotting this time?"
Draco was always plotting, and that was something Harry had got used to during their 5-year relationship. Not that it was a bad thing. Not always, at least. It usually involved surprising Harry in the most extreme and absurd way possible. It always kept Harry alert, on the edge of his seat, wondering what Draco would have in store for him this time. During their first year anniversary, Draco had tricked Harry into taking time off from work by practically kidnapping him and taking him to a resort in Paris for the week, and hiding the portkey back. Robards had been, apparently, aware of this, and though the first day of their trip was buried in an argument about doing things behind his back, Harry did relax the rest of the week. From there on, Draco's schemes became bolder, more complex. That was why, when Harry faced the entirely ordinary setting for two in the empty restaurant, fancy as only Draco could book, of course, but still it looked like a normal restaurant, and the cheesy band in the corner that had stopped playing when Harry almost choked on his words, and the ring in his sparkling wine glass, he was perplexed. Harry had suspected nothing when they went back to the resort of their first ever trip together. He thought nothing more of their holiday when Draco retraced the steps of their first time there, after Draco had stopped avoiding him, of course. He didn't suspect anything because it was all too mundane, too pedestrian for Draco. There had to be a catch. There always was. And that was how Harry knew this trip would be a complete disaster. Draco stared at him with a raised and expectant eyebrow, but his eyes were slightly hesitant, going from the ring still in the glass to Harry's face.
"It was becoming difficult to come up with new ways to rattle you, Potter. I figured that with your terrible detective skills, you would never deduce what I was doing."
"So instead of doing the most bizarre thing you could come up with, you're proposing in the most cliché way possible?" Draco shrugged, though his shoulders were still tense. Harry couldn't help the laughter bubbling inside him.
"I can't fucking believe it. You still surprised me. Congratulations."
Draco grinned, but his fingers were fiddling with the napkin in a way Harry knew meant he was unsure. He was insecure. Draco asked softly,
"You didn't really answer the greatest question of all, Harry."
Rolling his eyes, Harry slid his glass across the table and let his hand rest there.
"By now, I would have thought your powers of deduction would be better than that. Thought the lousy detective was me."
Draco snorted. His smile was smug, but it didn't replace the softness in his eyes when he retrieved the ring from the glass, subtly cast a drying charm, and slid it onto Harry's finger. Draco pulled Harry's hand towards him, lips brushing against it in a feathery kiss. He sighed and glanced at Harry again without releasing his fingers. He smiled then, one of those secret smiles he only ever directed at Harry, and said,
"You are. And you can't answer anything like a normal person, can you?"
"I will, when you learn how to ask." The band resumed playing in the background, now that he had apparently agreed to the proposal, a nice ballad that enveloped them in warmth. Harry wondered how long Draco took to plan this, how much he had thought about it, how much he hoped Harry would say yes, how he probably knew Harry wouldn't, not in the conventional way. He snorted, shaking his head, and whispered,
"It's a yes."